I'm Alan Kogan. Join me as I highlight small businesses with interviews on site at distilleries, breweries, and more. My mission is to share the stories of the awesome people behind the craft. Welcome to Crafted Conversations. We're here in Colorado Springs with Kim at Black Hat Distilling. Yep. First of all, I'm glad you're having me here because I don't live here and I'm out here for the convention. It just happens to work out. But I want to know about you and how you got into distilling.
I was about 2015. I picked up a book and decided, can I do this? whiskeys weren't expensive as they are now, but they were still... The good ones were still expensive. So I was tired of shelling out $100, $120 for like top shelf whiskeys. Cause if I'm going to drink it, I'm not going to drink crap. I just don't. That's just a rule for me. I've had too many bad hangovers as a teenager. I'm just not doing it. So I was like, can I do this? So like I said, I picked up a book, looked on the internet. There's a lot of great forums out there. Homedistiller.org and ADI, they're awesome for helping people out. So I just, is it legal? It's legal in Colorado to own a still. So I went up to Denver. There's a supplier up in Denver. I just picked one up and let's go. So the first time I ever made batches, I had probably 7 5-gallon batches on my floor at one time in this little tiny corner of my basement, which was right below my kitchen. I walked in my kitchen one morning and all I could smell was CO2 because there was so much fermentation going on right underneath my kitchen. So I was like, okay, well, this has got to calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
So I was just I just started doing more and more, moonshine, sugar, fruit, brandies, whatever I could get my hands on. And then when I got into the grains, the whiskeys, I wasn't a Scotch guy. And then I made my own and I realized you can make a good one. Well, they make good ones. I should say good for me.
Yeah.
It was for my taste. It was good for my taste. And that's when the bug kicked in. I was like, okay, this is what I want to do now. I got to find a way to make money on this. how do I do that? I'm still trying to learn that part out. So I'll let you know when that happens. But yeah, it was just, can I do this? Okay. I think I can do this. Let's just try it.
So. Yeah. I mean, usually my next question is about the learning process because, there's a lot of guys out there who have learned the craft from other people or they shadowed or they were just a smaller distiller at a larger company and then they went and made their own. But you're completely self-taught.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I didn't have anybody. So the about 5 years I was doing it, by myself before I came on here. Yeah. It was all self-taught. All just trial and error. For me, that's how I learned the best, is just trial and error.
Yeah. Was there something, when you started this, was there something that you wanted to make that was specific to your profile? I want my baby is a bourbon or a whiskey.
It was actually weird because it wasn't either one of those. I made distilled mead. And that was for me, that was honestly a game changer for me. I can't do it because honey is so expensive.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things, if I can find a way to do that, I'm going to do it. And I still believe that. I still want to do that. But that's when I was like, okay, that's the flavor profile I love. I tend to gravitate to more of the sweet stuff.
Sure.
I just have that palate for sweet stuff.
Yeah.
And that's when I was just like, that spirit is, I mean, that's what honestly was blew my mind how you could take, I don't want to say inferior product because it wasn't inferior, but you could take on a product and just completely transform it into something new. And it was just okay.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Very cool.
So,
I mean, part of why I'm doing this is because a lot of small operations like what you do, you're able to kind of experiment and play around. And I'm sure you have a lot of fun doing that. Is there something that you've done that's just out there that it sets you apart? What makes Black Hat different?
So I think, cause we actually make an American agave spirit
from
start to finish. So we get the agave, from an 8th generation farm in Mexico. So it's been roasted, shredded, roasted, and pressed. That's all that's been done to it. We don't, it's not an agave sweetener, it's not an agave nectar. So this Dueler's Dark right here that came about is our Reposado, but unlike most Reposados, it's aged on French oak.
Oh.
Which is my favorite wood to work with. I think it adds such a dynamic flavor, like almost a chocolatey flavor to it.
Yeah.
And that came about during COVID, and that's when my, at the time, my boss, the owner, Joe, I had him taste it, and he's like, I think that's what kind of changed his mind, and from staying in a small place to, I hope it is. It makes me feel better.
Yeah,
I don't know
yeah.
if it's true, but that's the impression I got. And so it's just, I love experimenting. I love doing weird stuff.
Yeah.
Don't get that opportunity so much once you go, you know, commercial. It's hard.
Yeah, you kind of chase the cash register a little bit. It's hard. I'm sure, I mean, do you have any barrels squirreled away that you're just like, we got to sit on this?
Yes.
Of course you do.
I do. I have a bunch of agave spirit in old whiskey barrels downstairs.
Oh, wow.
That I just want to forget about. Except for every month or two, I'll go down and taste
just
them.
Try
but,
it out.
But I just want to forget about them. I want to leave them down there. We don't have a need for them,
right.
But I wanted them for five. Maybe, you know, whatever years down the road, hopefully we make it that far. So yeah, I just love experimenting, doing weird stuff.
I love it. I think there's definitely a perception in the market now that's changing with craft. I mean, obviously the word craft is subjective.
Right.
Define it. I can't, but it's obviously it's smaller distilleries doing smaller stuff. And I think, you know, the market's shifting to really want that local stuff.
Yep.
So I'm kind of curious, Colorado Springs, how much are you getting from the local Colorado community?
I'm going to be honest, it's a little hard right now. You know, the inflation has really not helped us at all.
Yeah.
Like, it's been hard, but you know, we finally worked in to a number of stores in the city. We've actually got now contracts for 7 states.
Oh, wow.
Which is awesome and extremely frightening at the same time. Like,
yeah.
You know, that now I have quotas, like now I have production goals, and now I have like, so it's, you know, coming from my home to now, from a 10 gallon to sitting in front of 1,000 gallons still, like, you know, there's demand now, there's pressure, but I like that too. So it's just like, I just don't have any idea, right? Cause I, like I said, I was just in my basement. I never learned anybody. I never worked in a distillery before. I didn't know all of what it takes, but now finding out, it's scary and exciting at the same time.
Now that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
The adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
I'm a small business owner.
Yeah.
Hopefully not day to day, but maybe year to year. What about grains? Are you sourcing locally or trying to?
I'm not in the grain market yet. I want, this is hard for me to explain because I have an idea in my head.
Yeah.
How I want this to go. I don't want to make a whiskey like everybody else makes a whiskey, if that makes any sense. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel because, I mean, spirits have been around for thousands of years. I'm not trying to reinvent it, but I want to make it a whiskey, I don't know, for me. And then hopefully it resonates with other people.
Yeah.
And I have a mash bill in mind. It's really kind of weird. It has like some chocolatey malts and some other malts that you don't typically find, but... So right now, our whiskey is a sourced whiskey. So
okay.
I just want to be upfront.
Yeah,
and,
no.
And I don't have any problem with source. I
no.
mean, it's what most people do. I mean, and it's what new distilleries should do.
Yes.
And I will say that they should do that when they start. Because you can start selling right away and not have to sit on your product. So
right.
Sourcing is an incredible way for new distilleries and existing distilleries. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. And I don't want to... And I don't like when people talk bad about it either, because then they don't know what they're talking about.
So. Yeah, well, 100%. And MGP makes some good stuff.
Yes, they do.
So.
And there's smaller distilleries. So like one of our whiskeys is a small, when I say small distillery, I mean, we're small compared to them. So, you know, but they're in North Carolina, Southern Distilling Company.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just talked to them.
Yeah. We were there at the convention yesterday as well. And so their bourbon is unbelievable. And their double rye that I tried yesterday was incredible.
Yeah.
And I'm not a rye guy because I think people can overdo it with the spicy. It was unbelievable. It like every once in a while you get those opportunities that something just changes your perception on things and you're like, oh, it can be done well. That's how you do it. So yeah, we try to work with smaller places as much as we can. obviously MGP is a big producer, so I don't have any issues with that at all.
No, not at all. And especially because you guys are new and you're making ends meet. So and that allows you some more freedom to play and experiment.
Yeah. I'm going back to the whiskey thing. I have, you know, head brewers. I want to work with a brewery to actually do the mashing for me.
Oh yeah.
And then we can do collaborations like that. And then we can put their logo on our bottle right next to ours. That's what I want to do instead of buying a mash tun, buying a lot, you know, buying all that stuff here.
Right.
I want to work with other people to do that. Not, I don't want to say for me, but with me.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just think it's great for the community when people can do that.
Well, that goes back to what I was saying is I think the perception of the market is like, yeah, you have your big boys who sell, you know, in 200 countries and they're not bad product, but it's a big corporate monster.
Yep.
And you wanting to work with local breweries and maybe wineries, et cetera, that makes people in the area, or at least I would say within the States, they love that. It's a small business they can support.
Yeah, so I agree. I think, and unfortunately, in my experience, I'm just talking for myself, I don't think it's done enough.
Yeah.
I don't think it's done enough. I think sometimes in a market, even as small as Colorado Springs, we have, just off the top of my head, 5 distilleries here. Hmm. We're not in competition with each other. No, like, we need to be working with each other to help everybody succeed. Sometimes it's not like that, but that's not going to stop me from trying.
No.
So that's.
Is there what would you consider your baby? What are you making right now that is just like, this is what Black Hat is making. We are known for this. This is what I want to be known for.
Our American agave spirit.
Your agave spirit.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I just think it's a market that's not. It's starting to come more and more. You're seeing it more and more, but I think people don't know what an agave spirit is.
Because it's not tequila.
Right.
But it is tequila.
It is.
Just legal.
It's just not made in Jalisco, Mexico.
Right.
So, but it's the same ingredient. It's the same process. And I just want people to know that there are good, what an agave spirit is, and get a good one. And
yeah.
I think, I mean, obviously it's mine, so I think it's pretty good.
You're just biased.
Yeah. just a little bit.
Well, should we start with that? Because you're talking it up.
Sure. Would you rather start with like the Blanco, or do you want to start maybe with the Reposado? Which kind of, do you want to go light to dark or dark to light?
Let's go light to dark. That makes sense.
So this is our 100% organic blue agave.
Okay.
And there's no additives to this. I don't put back sweeten it. I don't do anything with it. It's as close to the piña as we can get.
Very and cool.
It doesn't taste like a tequila or an agave spirit that I think you're used to. It's much more floral and grassy.
Hey, that almost has like a nose of a gin.
It's very, very floral.
Yeah. Ooh, that's nice.
Thank you.
That's dangerous. Make a good margarita.
Yeah, it's my favorite one. With this one, I just put 2 ice cubes, about 2 fingers, and then a small wedge of lime, and that's how I drink that one.
Oh, that's easy.
Because it is easy to drink, like, and sometimes maybe too easy on some nights.
Yeah, that's the one bad part about this is I go and talk to you guys, and you make the good stuff, so it's like, great.
Yeah.
But I would rather spend the money on your stuff than the expensive brands because, well, one, I'm not rich, but
none of us are,
unfortunately. Well, tell me. So off camera, we were talking about the space that you're in. Tell me a little bit about Black Hat's and where you're at, and I know you're part of a restaurant too. Is that
so? Black Hat owns the building.
Okay.
So this building was built somewhere between 1915 and 1920.
Wow.
During the 1920s, there was a movie studio, which we have historians coming through here, and they say, "Yeah, I used to work there, or I have pictures of that in the museum." And so, this is a really historical building. And during the 1920s, it had a payroll larger than Hollywood.
Wow!
So the wing that we're in, the production wing we're in now, is one of 4. Hmm. So there's pictures outside in the restaurant that show. Them doing movies in here. There's movie cameras in that other room, like the old style, like arc light cameras, big, huge things. So it was a movie studio. And then they started making airplanes out of here just to sell their movies and their commercials and stuff. So their salespeople could fly over across the country.
Wow.
And then during World War II, they came in and started testing bomber engines here because we're right next to Pikes Peak. So they take them right up to the peak. And yeah, this building is incredible. It's taken a lot of work to get retrofitted for a distillery. But and then the restaurant is part of the building, but we just leased that to the public house. They're really good friends of ours. This is their second location, and they only serve our spirits in there, which is nice. That's kind of gives us, since we don't have a full on cocktail tasting room, they act as that for us.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's a really good partnership. They're really awesome up there.
Have you ever heard of Painted Stave?
No, I haven't.
They're a distillery out of Delaware, Smyrna, Delaware. I think they're one of like three distilleries in the entire state.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, right. Delaware is one of those really weird law states. Every state has a weird law with alcohol. But they actually, I did an episode with them, and I want to go back there and do on film and show them more, because they actually are in an old 1940s theater.
Oh, wow.
And they actually had to fill the bottom of the movie theater. You know, it goes down, it degrades for the seats.
Oh, yeah.
They had to fill it to make it level, put the still, and the still sits right in front of where the screen would be. And they left all the ornate, beautiful painting and ornate stuff on the wall. It's really cool.
That's the kind of stuff I think as a craft,
yeah,
you can do. Like you're not so limited in like big warehouse, you know, in a column going 40 feet out the roof, you know. Like that's the kind of cool stuff that I like too. Like I just appreciate the craftsmanship that goes into things, whether it be a spirit, a beer, a car, you know, or whatever it may be. Craftsmanship is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you have your own story. You have your own building that has history. Yeah. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, there's a photo out there of shows the whole grounds at the time when they were doing the movie studios. Oh, wow. And there's buildings behind us, but there were in the basement, they're walled off now, but there's tunnels where you could go underground to the other buildings. One, you know, to three different directions, there's tunnels that are now walled off, of course, but that's how they used to just move stuff around in between the buildings. It's just
cool.
Amazing what, you know, what's right in front of you that you might not see. Cause I've driven by this place hundreds of times and never knew it. And
yeah,
now that I'm in here, I'm like, wow, that's really cool.
Very cool. Well, let's cheers to history with some Reposado.
Sweet. So this one is about a 30 to 60 day aging. Unfortunately, at this time, we're only doing chips and staves. French oak barrels are really expensive and cost prohibitive for a brand new distillery.
I was going to ask about that.
but since we were at that same convention yesterday, I found a lot of suppliers. So hopefully we can get some barrels in here.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is aged on French oak, which gives it almost a whiskey type finish.
Definitely a lot of barrel note on the nose, but it's... Yeah, that's more my speed.
Yeah, so that one came about because we had an older location where we had a full-on cocktail tasting room.
Yeah,
and I got tired of people asking, "Do you have whiskey? You have whiskey? You have whiskey? You have whiskey?" No, I don't have whiskey. So we kind of came up with this one, and that's kind of filled that gap for us until we got into our blended whiskeys and stuff like that. But that's probably my favorite spirit that we make, because it does blend that agave taste,
yeah,
but also a whiskey taste.
So. Right. And you said there's no back sweetening on that at all?
None. We don't back sweeten anything but our liqueurs. That's the only thing we put sugar in, and then we don't add glycerin, caramel color. There's none of that in any of our bottles at all.
That's awesome. And it's impressive too. It's very sweet. And I love that the fact that this is America's whiskey country, right? And your focus and your baby is on an agave spirit.
Right. I just think it's different. I think
that's great.
And agave was not something I was into beforehand. But when I started making good tequila, good agave.
You liked it.
I was like, okay. And it's the same thing. Like we talked earlier about something, and I was just like, okay, I made it good, or what I think is good. I don't want to speak for everybody. I think it's pretty good. This is now, okay. Now let's start this. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Because I think we have something here. So something that we can grow on.
Very cool.
Sorry. No, go ahead. And it's not a whiskey. We have three whiskey distilleries in this city.
Right.
So we don't have to compete with them. You know, we can help them. Hopefully they can help us by drawing attention to them and us to them. So it's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, that is one thing I love about, you know, you smaller guys in the craft industry, that you can really work together. There's a lot of it. There's a sense of community behind it. We all want to succeed and be successful. And you know, we all want to make good whiskey. And the funny thing about that, too, is you could give your recipe to the guy next door and they can make it the exact same way. It would still taste different. And that's what I love about this industry, is that we're not all Jim Beam making the exact same white label. Not to poo-poo them.
Right.
They make good product. They have a history. But, you know, your ragtagness allows you to do this. And, I mean, Jesus, I love tequila to begin with. And yeah. I've been doing more sampling of agave spirit in America. It's just they're not that frequently found in stores. Especially, I live in Virginia, and they have ABC, state-controlled stores. 1800 and Jose Cuervo have the market on that.
Right.
Sorry, you can't buy anything else.
So, but, you know, that happens. And I just think, yeah, I love being craft. I mean, eventually, would I not like to be craft? Yes, because that don't make me a lot of money. But I like being craft because it does afford the opportunity to do weird things, collaborations. And, there's probably, I know of three breweries that have our old barrels with beer in them right now.
Mm.
One's coming out. One was in our Reposado, like an American oak Reposado barrel that they have a Mexican lager in that they're going to release on, you know, on Cinco de Mayo.
That's cool.
And then we have another one that's has a barley wine in it. I can't wait to get the barley wine back because I think that's going to be pretty cool. But it's those things that we get to do as a smaller place that I'm sure the bigger guys would love to do, but they just can't.
They can't justify it.
Right, yeah.
I was just talking to a distiller that's putting 5-year-old bourbon in their bourbon cream. Why? Because it was the closest barrel they could get access to. They didn't want to pull out pallets of their 2 years somewhere. And then it's like, well, if you're Buffalo Trace, or no way in hell that's going in bourbon cream.
Right.
And it's like, it tasted pretty good. Now you kind of pigeonholed yourself to the quality.
That's got to be a really good bourbon cream. Yeah, that's got to be great. 5 year. Whew.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but, you know, for them now, they have to, you know, so 5 years in a rick house somewhere, that's shelf space for something else that, you know, that's a lot of, that'd be a pretty pricey bourbon cream, I think, but I'm sure it tasted great.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I put in my coffee. So do you have a separate rick house or just the basement, or how?
So we have a basement and it's sort of smaller. It only holds about 120 barrels.
Okay.
But it's completely full right now. So we have some of our rum aging. We have more straight regular reposado aging that's back in the corner. I want that put away. I don't want to touch it. I don't want anybody to know it's there.
Yep.
And I did it without my business partners knowing either. He was like, where'd all that stuff go? Oh, I don't know. It's in the basement. I was just like, well, we don't need it now.
Yeah,
we might need it. And that's what's new to me too, is having to look 5 years on for product aging product. Like, you have to look what might be going, you know, coming down the road, you know, 5 years from now.
Yeah, you might have pulled the lottery. In 5 years, agave spirit could be the biggest thing since single malt.
Let's do it. Let's make it happen. But yeah, it's those things that, starting from scratch with no experience, that you, when you think about it, you're like, oh crap, yeah, I gotta have put some stuff away. I just can't like leave it out, you know, so I got to put it away. I can't just bottle it. It's those things that if you let it, it'll sneak up on you and you'll be like, ooh, uh-oh.
Yeah. Have you had any happy accidents?
I've
heard a lot of stories about crap. People just like, oh crap, but it's good. How do I replicate that?
Yes, I had a couple, and it happened with one of our rums and actually one of our agave batches where it kind of soured. Like basically a sour mash.
Yeah, yeah.
And I loved it. It was amazing. Like, so I tried to, we have fermenters behind us, but I try to leave them open top. I don't seal them off.
Sure.
So I like the wild strains of yeast. And does it lend to a consistent batch? Probably not.
Right.
But that's not what I'm going for. I'm not going for that right now. Like, I want just good. And it was, oh my God. Like, and then I was told, stop. We have to focus on the stuff that it's actually going to be on market.
So, right.
But yeah, those sour, like it's a sour, it was a sour agave mash and a sour rum mash.
Wow.
That just, there was something in the air that day that just made it, you know, a wild bacteria strain got in it. But it was like, it's all gone now.
Of course it is.
We drank it all.
Of course it is. See the disappointment on my face.
Sorry.
That sounds off. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I just, it's one of those cool things that just happens.
Yeah. Now, before I forget, and before we move to the next spirit, I have to ask, Black Hat, where does it come from?
It comes from the idea of people who've changed history or been history makers have always worn black hats. So you, Abraham Lincoln, the big, tall stove hat. You know, your Billy the Kids and all these. Doesn't have to be a good person, but somebody who's changed history or made history or who's known throughout history has always seemed to wear a black hat.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we feel is we're trying to agave spirit in America. We're trying to change something, trying to bring focus to something. So let's be black hats and let's do it our way and the way we want to do it.
I love it. That's cool. Very cool. All right. What should we try next?
We'll go with the whiskey. So this is our source whiskey. It's a blend of two bourbons. One, like I said, is from Southern Distilling Group. And the other one is another bourbon. I have some left in my glass.
Sorry.
No, you're good. I don't let that go to waste. And I'm being very rude and pouring for myself first.
No, you're fine.
So it's a blend of two different bourbons in a ratio that, again, that we like. I'm not going to tell you that. I guess that's trade secret. I'm going to come out with those trade secrets.
See, I'll CGI that out. This will be a blurred glass.
That's all good. Yeah, it's just two different bourbons in a blend that we think works for us.
What's the, it's 40%.
Yeah. I have a problem, or I had a problem with people using cask strength as a catch-all or just to hide a bad spirit.
Sure.
Like, but now as doing this more, I realize a good cask strength is a really good cask strength. Like there are good ones out there.
Oh yeah.
But there are bad ones out there.
Oh,
and
yes.
I think I started with the bad ones. So that's why like I'm trying to change the idea in my own head of what a cask strength should taste like and realize there are good ones.
Yeah.
But I started at 40% because I wanted you to be able to drink the spirit unadulterated, you know, just clean the spirit itself. You didn't need an ice cube or water. If you didn't want one, if you want one, drink whiskey how you like to drink whiskey.
That's right.
I don't let anybody tell you how you're supposed to drink it.
Amen.
So, and that's why I started with 40. I was like, okay, let's get this 40 out there so we can get this people to taste the spirit. And I do have we are going to release that in a barrel strength, probably hopefully sometime this year. And it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very, very mellow. And, I mean, is a little bit of high rye.
A little bit.
Yeah.
It's the, one of the blends is, I think the highest rye in one of the whiskeys is like 25. So it's not very, it's not like
yeah.
a 95.5, but it's a pretty higher rye bourbon.
I've become more, I don't know what the right word is. I love a higher rye, but I'm not a big fan. There's a select few distilleries that make a good 100% rye, but some are just spicy to be, like you said before, spicy for spice's sake.
Yeah.
But some bourbon really benefit from having just a little bit of a peppery note that I love.
I couldn't agree more. And I was never a rye guy because I had the overspiced. It just felt like you stuffed a bunch of peppercorns in your mouth and like,
yeah,
that doesn't do anything for me.
No.
Like it doesn't elevate the spirit. It doesn't elevate your, elevate your craft. Like, yeah, just make a good spirit.
Yeah.
Like that's all I want. That's all I want to do. And that's all I wish the industry to do. I can't change the industry. So I have to change what we do here. Just make a good spirit.
Right.
Make it right the first time. You don't have to filter it. Charcoal filter. You don't have to like add sugar. You don't have to add, you know, back sweetener. You don't have to add caramel color. You don't have to just make it right. And I think that's what most craft people, that's all they want.
Right.
That's all they want. They want to make a good spirit.
Yes.
And if they can make money doing it, great. Like right. That's even better.
That's the goal.
But they start out, we just want to make good spirits, whether it be an agave spirit or a whiskey or a rum or brandy or, you know, whatever it may be. you start out wanting to make a good spirit. Sometimes people get lost along the way,
but sure.
most of us, and I hope most of us still continue that. And that's my goal.
Is there anything that you want to make that you're just not able to yet because either the market or that you're just priced out of it or you just don't have the time?
Actually, we released a Apple Brandy in 2000, and it won gold at the New York Spirits competition.
Oh, wow.
But the price of apples is skyrocketing. You can't.
Oh, yeah.
And it hurts.
Yeah.
Like, we have a, you know, gold medal winning spirit that we could get the apples in, but it would price us out of the market. Like, it wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be feasible for us.
Right.
So that kind of stuff is unfortunate. It just happens, you know? So I'm hoping the price of apples comes down here, you know, in the next year or so, because I'd love to make that again. And like, I'd love to make my honey distilled mead again.
Yes.
But it's, you know.
It's tough. That's the one thing that a lot of people don't think about. I mean, I'm a whiskey drinker. I love whiskey. But, and even going to the convention, you forget about all the peripheral businesses that exist within, you know, it's not just distilling mash and then drinking it.
Right.
There's cooperage. There's, you know, the equipment that we're sitting next to, that's probably more than what I'm worth.
Me too.
But, you know, and the market changes and shifts and things make it difficult. I'm sure COVID was difficult for you guys. I mean, it's an up and down roller coaster that I'm really proud of the community that you guys have built, along with other distillers, that you're still going at it.
Yeah, I mean, like, so I started with Black Hat January 2020, so that was 3 months before COVID, like, shut everything down. I was like, I told my wife, like, well, that was a great 3 months. That was pretty fun, you know, because, I mean, we were small. We had a 200-gallon still at the time. We're producing super small batches. How are we going to make it through this?
Yeah.
Hand sanitizer.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, a lot of people kind of pitched towards that, and that really saved our bacon, honestly, and allowed us to continue to just stay alive. We didn't make money making hand sanitizer, don't get me wrong, like, but it allowed us to still exist. And then once those kind of COVID restrictions kind of lifted, and then Colorado passed a great law for, like, to-go cocktails.
Yes.
So we were making, like, we used to call them adult Capri Suns in a pouch. And we made a bunch of those, and those really helped us. And then we started doing, like, outside events where you could host people outside. I mean, that really kind of kept us alive.
And right.
Then we started after all the, most of the restrictions lift, we just got right back into our normal procedure. And it was close.
Oh, I bet. Well, hey, well, young, small, scrappy. I mean, that's what defines you.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I wish that there was a way to keep the smallness, but of course keep making the money and the product. Because that I think the market loves that small little area, that, like, this story that I'm sharing, or that you're sharing with me, and I'll share with others, is what makes people go, oh, that guy's doing something cool. That's awesome. And if you blow up, which I hope you do.
Me too.
I hope that you can keep that sense of, but we're still making good stuff.
That is honestly my top priority.
Yeah.
Is, yes, you don't get into a business not wanting to make money, right? You don't.
Right.
But you also have to realize what made you the money. Like, that's the thing, is like, yes, I can now pivot to whatever, you know, XYZ, and I can make a lot more money, but that's not what I wanted to do.
Right.
So, yeah, I think you nailed it. I think that's the biggest struggle people have.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you're a small business, you're just starting a distillery, you need to make money.
Right.
There's no denying that. But you also, if you give all of that up, then what are you doing?
Right. Do you guys do any, like, gin or vodka at all?
We have a blended gin. This is really weird. Like, I didn't like gin.
Same.
And then we kind of blended two different styles of gins together. One is a very London style. And then we also blended it with a orange, like, citrus gin.
Mm.
So you get this really London style dry juniper right at the front. Then it finishes, like, very citrusy and orange, very fresh, so it doesn't weigh down your palate, I guess is how I explain it.
Sure.
And it's great. And I hated gin.
I'm in the same boat. And my listeners and viewers are gonna, you know, they're turn their brain off because I've said this a billion times, but my favorite part about going to whiskey distilleries or people that make whiskey is that they also dabble in gin and vodka and agave spirit. And I love vodka and agave spirit. That's a different story. But the gin has always been a turnoff for me because it's just pine sol. It's a pine cone and like, you know, beef eater and blah, blah. But you guys are, you do something really cool. And it's like, oh, this is actually a good quality gin. I could put that in a cocktail or even sip it neat.
I wish we could get more of America to see it that way because America does not like gin right now.
It's a slow uptick. It's like a competition between rye whiskey and gin on the it's like a 5% growth every year. It's kind of funny.
Being able to make a spirit that you thought you didn't like.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, okay, I guess I do like that one. If it's made, you know, this way or taste this way, you're like, okay, now let me see what else I can do. Like it just, those little experiments that turn out well, just drive you to do something else, to try something even, maybe even weirder. Like,
right.
But I mean, 90% of the time, do they work out? No, they don't. 10%, you can find something that is just maybe not transforms the industry because I mean, that's a one in a million shot to do,
yeah.
But transforms the way you think, or I think about what a gin is. And now I can go try more and see like, okay, well, I like that one. So those are the cool things that I think get overlooked.
Yeah.
As a distillery or as a distiller or a person in the industry is letting it change your mind when you find something good or you make something good. Even maybe a happy accident, like the stuff that got soured on me. Like, it's just like, those are the happy accidents that drive for me forward and keep me going in this industry.
But that's really cool. I don't know, earlier you were saying that you were more of a beer guy before you got into this.
Yeah.
How much of that did that influence you in your making a product? Is there a flavor profile that you gravitated towards for beer that you're like, I want to do that? Or is there a...
Well, I know there's one I steer away from, and that's IPAs.
Okay, well, we're opposite there.
Oh, no.
I love this. The stinkier, the better.
So I could never get into them. Like, I couldn't get into... So I drifted away from IPAs, and I was more like the Belgians and the Sours and, you know, the Heffies and stuff like that. That's kind of where I gravitated. But then I also like stout. So I was on weird spectrums, you know, super light, blonde, and then... about mud thick stouts. That's where I liked, those were my kind of corners where I, so that's kind of how this whiskey or this mash bill I have in my head came from, was like a stout, like chocolatey malts, you know, darker malts and just enough of the regular malts to, you know, for the enzymes to get it. But those chocolatey malts don't have much in them, but they have a lot of flavor.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I still have that grain bill like going around in my head all the time, just trying to figure it out. And this is like, I want something stouty, but light enough to drink that you're not feeling like you're drinking mud, like a whiskey that's super light, but still carries that stout flavor. That's, if you ask me if that's my dream, that's a whiskey that I dream about. That's the one I want. Now I just gave it away to everybody else.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Hey, if you can make it, please make it and I will buy it.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Amen to that. Yeah. I'm poor because of that. People keep making good things. All right. What's the last sample we got?
So the last sample is our apple cider liqueur that's made with our whiskey. So this is a 20% 40 proof apple cider. So I'll pour you first this time.
Thank you.
Yeah, this one is dangerous for me. I drink a lot of it over Thanksgiving and so this one was developed by a guy that works for me, Nick. He used to be a head brewer. He came up with this one, so I will not take credit for this one at all. But this is like campfire, like just sit around, sip.
It tastes like an apple pie that's made in a cast iron in a campfire.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's not overly sweet. I mean, it's sweet because it's a liqueur.
Yeah.
But you're not like overpowered by the sweetness. Yeah. And it's made with real apple juice, our whiskey that we just tasted, and some spices. That's really it. I mean, we don't use artificials. I don't like the taste. So we try to stay away from the artificial flavorings as much as we can. When I say as much as we can, we don't use them at all.
Yeah,
so
right.
Let me just say that. We don't use them at all. But yeah, this is... this sold really well when we introduced it late winter. Like it was, you put about 30 seconds in a microwave and it's a nice hot apple cider.
Oh yeah.
So that's, yeah.
Oh, and that would be perfect in a hottie toddy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, because a lot of apple liqueurs or apple jacks or anything made with apple juice, they sometimes the viscosity is just too thick and syrupy and very sticky.
Yeah.
And it tastes good, but it's like,
how much can I actually drink?
Yeah.
How much can I actually drink? Well, on Thanksgiving, I drank a whole bottle. I'll just say that. You don't even have to cut that out. Like, I was just like, all night long, I just kept going back. I'd only pour like a finger at a time.
Yeah.
Put it in the microwave for 30 seconds. By the end of the night, I came back. I was like, who's been drinking this with me? And everybody's like, nobody's touched it. I was like, oh. But the next cool thing is it's not overly sweet. So the next day I wasn't like wrecked.
Yeah. You wouldn't have a bunch of sugar and tannins in your body. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's just way we like to do things with all natural stuff. So
I love it. Well, cheers to that. I'm curious, is there anything coming up from Black Hat that people can look forward to, or that you're allowed to
say? You want the inside secrets?
You're allowed to say?
I might even say one I'm not even supposed to say.
Oh,
but
perfect.
So we have our Barrel Strength Whiskey that we're going to release hopefully this year. And then we have this Dueler's Dark in cask strength.
Oh.
Yeah, that one's really good.
I bet.
I'm not going to lie. That took me by surprise. Because like we said, I wasn't a huge fan of cask strength. I am more now, but when I tasted this one straight out, you know, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe how much more of the agave flavor you actually get at a higher proof. And that was one of the things that led me to like, okay, cask strength maybe not be all that bad. So yes, those, the Barrel Strength Whiskey and then the cask strength Dueler's Dark, which we're going to call the Midnight.
Mm.
Those two, I will fight tooth and nail to get released this year because, cask strength is a huge market.
Oh.
Like I'm like, there's no denying it. And I fought it for a while cause I wasn't happy with the cask strength that I found. Well, I found good ones and now I think I made a good one with the Dueler's Dark. Now my whole like view on the idea has changed. And I think that's a good thing. I was so blown away by the Midnight.
I'm originally born and raised in Milwaukee, and one of my good friends is the head distiller at Great Lakes Distilling downtown Milwaukee, Nate Newbrow. Shout out to Nate. He's great. He makes some good stuff. And he dropped the word proof head on me, and it's apparently part of the industry calls the people like me who love cask strength and barrel proof. We're proof heads. A younger generation who prefers cask strength whiskey because someone on YouTube at some point said that cask strength is more flavorful. And it is, because alcohol is a delivery for flavor. But yeah, he's like, oh, you proof heads. I'm like, that's a new term for me.
That's a new one. I mean, I never heard that one, but we tend to do that, don't we? It's just label people in a certain group. Like, but if you find the right one,
yeah,
call me a proof head then. I don't care. Like,
I own it.
Yeah, sure. I just.
It's also cheaper. If I drink more cask strength whiskey, I don't have to spend as much money.
And you don't have to drink as much.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, like I said, my whole idea on the cask strength is completely changed. And I welcome that. I welcome to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
Because what else are we doing if we're not willing to be proved wrong and learn? Like, so now I learned from having a good cask strength to now I get to release one that I think is good.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great thing for craft people within the industry to change each other's opinions on some things.
Right.
I don't know everything. I barely know what I'm doing here day to day. Kidding, but sometimes it feels like that, right? Running a small business, you're like, oh crap, what am I into now? Like,
yeah,
but yeah, like, so yeah, change your opinion. Let your opinion be changed. Don't be so hard and fast on something that,
right?
You know, because I've had good IPAs. We just talked, and I didn't like them IPAs at first, but then when you have a good one, you're like, okay,
yeah, this is what's possible.
I'm not chewing on a Christmas tree. I can actually taste the other malts. But I also get the hops flavor.
Right.
So it's the same with cask strength. I had a good cask strength. Now I can drink them. And now I They're not all good.
There are a lot that are good.
Yeah.
I'll say that. But yeah, no, it's kind of a testament to, you know, as a small business and a craft distiller, I mean, you're always learning.
Yeah.
And that's a good lesson to learn.
I strive to always be learning something every day. Doesn't always work out.
Yeah.
But at least I want to be proven wrong, because then I learn what not to do.
Yeah.
And then what I learn what to do.
Sure.
So prove me wrong. Fine. I don't have any problem with it. I'm not so. Yeah, just prove me wrong. I just want to learn. Like, I want to learn everything about this industry I can, but, you know, well, I'm not going to learn everything. But as long as I can learn something, I'm happy.
Yeah. No, well, I appreciate your enthusiasm, your ambition, and your hunger to do it, or do it the right way, and
yeah,
do it in a way that, yeah, you still got to make money, but also, you know, this is a good quality product that you put your name behind.
Yeah.
So
when I came on board with Black Hat, so I'm kind of changing directions here. I'm sorry, but in 2020, when I came on board and when they wanted to hire me, I said, I will not put a product out this door that I would not drink. And they were, the owners at the time were okay with that. They were like, fine, do it that way. And I still do that to this day. If I'm not going to drink it, I won't release it.
Kudos to that. That's good. Also, how do you know you're making good something good if you're not going to drink it?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, me and my wife kind of laugh all the time. Like, we drank more before here, starting as a distillery, than we do now. But what we do drink now is good.
Yeah.
Whether it be mine or somebody else's local, or, you know, another good, you know, nationwide brand. You know, one of my favorites is just the basic Heaven Hill, like the $25 bottle of Heaven Hill you find on the shelf. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, because the price is not always the indicator of what's good and what's bad.
Amen to that.
So
that's, you know, very true. There's a lot of crap distillers who make a $30 bottle that could be priced to $80.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the big boys who charge.
You know, when we decided to really focus on our agave spirits, we tried a lot of tequila, a lot.
That must have been tough.
Oh, it was super tough, man. It was difficult.
I had to sample all this alcohol.
But we found most of, and I don't, when I say lower shelf, I don't want to mean like taste wise, but the lower shelf stuff always seemed to taste better than the higher shelf stuff.
Yeah.
Because they're craft, they're smaller, you know, they can only do so much, smaller batches. And that's what kind of was like, okay, we can do this as a smaller distillery. We're not competing with Patron or, you know, Jose Cuervo. That's not our market. That's not what we're after.
Right.
So, you know, but we found that we can do this and we can do it right. So that's,
well, cheers to that. I mean, you guys got a good operation going here, and I'm glad I was in the area to.
I'm glad you stopped by. Yeah.
Yeah, hit you up, and I brought all my stuff on the plane with me. So
sure, that was fun.
Oh yeah, TSA loves a bunch of electronic equipment in a small bag. But no, I'm glad I could stop by and try other stuff, and I really appreciate you having me. It's been a pleasure.
Appreciate you coming down. Yeah, this is new for me. So
you did well.
Thanks. Hope I didn't ramble too much.
Ah, no, you're totally fine. But I appreciate it, and I'll be back.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, man.
Cool. Cheers, Kim.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you. I want to go to cheers you with an empty glass, yeah, but that's just rude. Oh. Off camera?
Now I got to pour more.
The whiskey
peach. Oh. So we do have, we just, and I didn't bring it out. I should have. We're now doing canned cocktails,
okay,
RTDs. So our first one released is our Paloma, which our nice sales girl is going to come in and just,
oh, look at you,
put
on
it
on the spot.
So it's our Paloma with our everyday tequila with grapefruit juice and a little bit of sweetener. It's a 10%.
Hmm.
So we had this discussion went around all the time. We're going to release an RTD. What percentage should it be? You know, so you find 6 to 7.
Yep.
8 is kind of like the higher end. I just said, if I'm going to buy an RTD, the first thing I'm going to look at is the flavor.
Yeah.
But like, the next thing is a percentage. If it's a higher percentage, I'm probably going to buy it. So that's kind of like how we went with this one. So yeah, it was just.
Nice.
And we're going to be releasing a few more. So this is our whiskey peach tea that I just had. Our gummy bear, pineapple gummy bear, which is kind of a play on gin and juice. So it has our gin in it, but it's pineapple flavored. Drawing a blank here. Oh, our rum punch.
Oh.
So these are the ones that we're going to release hopefully by the end of the summer, so we can have like the assorted pack to it. But
it's very cool. Yeah, RTDs are all the rage.
Oh,
so
she's coming in with another.
Oh, one. We got more. Okay, cool. See, I'm glad I didn't stop.
So that's our Paloma that's in this in the can. And again, it's real grapefruit juice, our tequila, and a little bit of simple at 10%.
Ah, at 10%?
Yeah.
So, Jesus.
Thank you.
I gotta move here.
Well, I don't know if we can ship to West Virginia or not. That's one of those weird, probably state-controlled states, right? You said.
Yeah, Virginia. But yeah. Nah, well, we'll get there.
Yeah.
I'll spread the word and tell them it's worth it.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
We're really trying to do, like, yeah, not change the industry, but do the industry the way that we want to do it. Like,
yeah.
Can't always worry about everybody else, but RTDs. I mean, we're in Colorado. We have 300 days of sunshine a year. You want a nice RTD when you're on the golf course or just hiking or, you know, on the river or whatever. So
yeah,
that was our goal.
No, that's great. So, well, now I'm going to cheers you because we'll have something.
Sweet.
So cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you,
man. I really appreciate you stopping by.
Of course. Glad to be here. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd really appreciate a follow and share on social media, subscribe to our YouTube, and be sure to give us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Everything you see and hear is out of pocket for us, including travel. If you support our mission of showcasing the amazing stories behind these small businesses, do me a favor and head over to buymeacoffee.com/craftedconvos. Buy Me a Coffee is an awesome way to help creators like me with simple one-time donations or a monthly contribution. Every dime goes into giving these breweries, distilleries, and more some much-deserved limelight. If you have any questions or concerns, please reach out. Cheers!